Okay, we're going to begin in like 30 seconds. One moment. Okay. Good evening, everyone. Everyone who's watching on Zoom, on Facebook. Good to be with you all here tonight for the second in the series of a schmooze with my father, where we're just going to schmooze about different interesting topics, perhaps somewhat a little bit controversial, which will take place over the next coming weeks on Wednesday night. Once again, let's try and make this a little bit interactive. So if you're on Zoom, you could post questions or comments in the chat box. If you're watching on Facebook, feel free to comment on Facebook as well and ask questions. Let's make this interactive. So the topic of tonight is somewhat of a serious topic and a very important topic to discuss, and that is the idea of mental health in general, and in particular, in its relevance to the current times which we're in, COVID-19, coronavirus, and all the lockdowns and everything like that, and its effect on people's mental health. As the research has been done, if you look this up on the internet, there is an increase in people suffering from mental health issues. There's a rise in anxiety and depression and all the outcomes of that as well. So just to give a little bit of introduction before we start the conversation, what's very important just to point out here is that this is not a political discussion. We're not politicians. Anything we discuss here tonight about lockdowns wouldn't be relevant anyway. I don't believe any of the premiers are listening to this conversation. It's not going to be of much relevance, and it just causes bitterness and disputes for no reason. So the topic of tonight is not, should we lock down or should we not lock down? And you know, are we going overboard? Are we not going overboard? Does this cure work? Does that cure work? Vaccines, not vaccines. That's not the topic of tonight. The fact is that over the past few months, the world has shut down. That's the fact. Whether it was right or wrong, that is just the fact. And the fact is that it's had a terrible effect on people's mental health. Whether it was worth it or not, that's a separate discussion. We'll leave that up for the politicians to discuss that. What we're discussing here tonight is the relevance to and the effect of the lockdown of coronavirus in general on mental health. That's just a very important disclaimer to point out. So any questions that you ask or any comments that you put, please keep that in mind. This is not a political discussion. We're not discussing lockdowns, the pros and cons. We're discussing mental health. Okay, so let's open up the discussion with my father, Rabbi Gerari. And again, if anyone has anything to say, please comment. So I guess the first question is, let's just backtrack for a moment. We started with a similar question last week, about the topic last week. And that is mental health a problem which people have suffered from throughout all the ages? Or is this a relatively new problem? Did our great grandparents suffer from mental health issues? Is this a new phenomena? Are we just pointing it out more now? What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, good to be with everyone once again. Always nice to talk to my son. It's a good opportunity. I just want to make one little introduction before I begin, and that is, I'm going to be making, I guess, in response to some of your questions, some comments tonight about the issues surrounding mental health. But I'm not a therapist. I'm certainly not qualified as a therapist, which I think will probably be one of my points tonight. But I do have a keen interest in personal growth, and I have a keen interest in reaching out to people that are going through these kind of issues. As a support role, but and you know, I've obviously read a little bit, and I'll quote some of the readings and some of the literature to you, but I don't want to make misrepresent myself, I'm certainly not a qualified therapist in any stretch of the imagination. Having said that, I want to make a couple of comments about your question. First of all, it's really nice to be calling it mental health, actually. That's a very positive spin on it. Although it's not meant to be as like a rose-colored glasses, sort of in denial type of perspective. Mental illness exists, and it exists a lot. But, you know, it's always nice to focus on what we could do, not what is wrong. The Lubavitcher Rebbe had this thing that in Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, they refer to a hospital as Bet Cholim, which basically means a house for the sick. And he said he was very insistent he would never call it that. He would always call it a bet refuah, a place of healing. So I guess one of the focuses of our discussion is not just to highlight a problem, but actually to highlight the fact that there's help and people should seek help. So to go to your question, mental health and mental health issues and mental illness for that matter is a real thing. It's a real problem, and it's been around for ages. Maybe not talked about as much as nowadays, but it's been around for a long time. In fact, what's fascinating is, if one does a bit of research, you will know that in the Talmud, and even earlier than that in the Tanakh, there are various discussions and various references that surround and focus the areas of mental health. If we can say that, and I don't like normally to talk about the great sage of the Tanakh, but the commentary say this about Shaul HaMelech, King Saul, at the end of his life, who suffered from a ruach ra, which literally means an evil spirit. But Avudraham and other great commentaries talk about morosh chayra, a melancholy that overtook him, and a fear that overtook him, almost like an anxiety and a depression in a way, if we can say that. But in the Talmud, there's a lot of discussion around the issue of depression, psychosis, anxiety, fear, and so on and so forth. There's it is there if one does the research. I did recently a 3-part series on mental health, and I spoke at great length about this topic, about where we find it. And the Rambam, in fact, I'll tell you something very fascinating. The Rambam, Maimonides, of course, was a doctor, but a doctor in more ancient times, speaks about the mental state of a person's mind. He talks about morosh chayra, melancholy. Now, what's fascinating is he talks about it in the context of the medicine of his time, and he calls it morosh chayra, which in English is melancholy. But what it actually means is a black bile, a black juice, because in the way the theory went then was that the body is governed by 4 different types of juices with different colors, and if there's an imbalance of one or the other, it causes different illnesses and different pathologies within the person. If there's a morosh chayra, if there's an imbalance or too much black juice, it causes melancholy, it causes depression. And the Rambam gives various therapies. What's fascinating is that in modern medicine, it's a fairly recent discovery that depression often comes as a physiological illness because there's an imbalance in the body. In fact, what modern medicine has done, I mean modern, I'm talking about post Freud, right, where in Freud's times, they thought it was sourced in some sort of previous trauma, either conscious or subconscious, but it was always trauma triggered. But in fact, it's not necessarily that way. Sometimes it's purely an illness. It's a physiological thing or a combination of both. And in fact, modern medicine thinking actually confirms the Rambam's perspective that morosh chayra, depression, is actually comes from an imbalance in the body, and one has to deal with it. The point I want to make, however, is that the reason why I'm saying that is because it has always been around. It is around more. What we need to do more is create a bigger awareness that it is like any other illness. So just like we talk about heart attacks or cancer, God forbid, or anything else, it's something that we should talk about, because it's difficult to talk about because for some reason, for whatever, I mean, many reasons, but when it comes to mental health, there's a lot of stigma surrounding it. Getting better, I should say, it is getting better, even in very Jewish or from religious communities where there was more of a stigma and there was more not talked about. It is getting better.
Why do you think there is a stigma? What's the reason for the stigma?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I mean, it's a good question. I think part of it is that there's a lack of awareness of what it is, because I think there was associated, people are unaware that anxiety, depression, all these things can be very physiological, and it's just like contracting any other illness, whether it's an ongoing illness or not, and therefore there's nothing to be ashamed about it. It's not a stigma. People thought that, you know, it means there's something wrong with the person. He's lost his mind, or whatever the case is, right? There's issues to do with because of that sort of non-awareness that is to do with shidduchim, marriages, prospective marriages, that could be an issue, social issues and all kinds of things, but it shouldn't be that way. People need to talk about it and not be afraid, not be ashamed, because the more awareness we create in that area of health, the more we create the awareness of the possibilities of intervention and the possibilities of help.
Okay. So we'll come to what we can do about mental health and how do you diagnose it, etc. But just to veer off a little bit for a moment, from just a Jewish perspective, not so much on how to treat it, but you know, illness in general has a big effect on Jewish law, on halacha. For example, if someone's sick, you violate the Shabbos, you drive to hospital. If someone's sick on Yom Kippur, if someone's extremely sick and it's dangerous for them to fast, they don't have to fast. Would you say that mental health actually has an effect on Jewish law, on practical Jewish law? If someone comes to a rabbi and says, you know, I suffer from anxiety, and therefore, you know, fasting on Yom Kippur would make it worse, or something like that. Would that have any effect on Jewish law?
Good question. So the answer is yeah, absolutely. First of all, in recent times, there's actually more talked about in the poskim and the halachic authorities. There's more literature, more responsa. In current times, Rabbi Osher Weiss in Eretz Yisrael, a great halachic authority, has a number of pieces on it. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein addressed certain issues. For example, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein addressed the issue of addictions, which is also in the area of mental health. So the short answer is yes. I'll just give you a couple of examples. First of all, often when a person suffers from a mental health issue, depending on what it was, but particularly if it's an area of psychosis, it affects their decision-making ability. In the Gemara, we find there's a category called a shoiter, which some people translate as a fool or insane person. That's not what it means at all. It means a person who is mentally incompetent, and it could be because they're going through a mental illness of any psychotic behavior or psychosis, whatever the case is. The nature of the illness, by definition, unlike other illnesses, will attack the clear thinking of a person, and that might affect the decision making. It might affect their, for example, if they sign a contract, is the contract valid? Their obligations to keep certain mitzvot, is it as obligatory, or is their lack of decision making ability maybe absolve them from certain things? Another example is, a more current example is something that's talked about because there's been more greater awareness about this, is in the area of obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. The person is extremely, extremely anxious and obsessive, and often that manifests itself in not being able to do something once, but repetitive behavior. And what it does is often, it's a myth, by the way, religion doesn't cause OCD, but it manifests itself often in religion like it does in other things. It can manifest itself in continuously washing hands, cleanliness, obsessive cleanliness, and sometimes obsessive religion. So there's been response, and this goes back, actually, fascinating enough, it's spoken about by Reb Osher Weiss, but actually it goes back to the Stipler. The Stipler is currently in Bnei Brak. There's a very old, great Torah sage called Reb Chaim Kanievsky. The Stipler was his father, and he addresses the question that came to him about someone who, a student in yeshiva, who was davening excessively, and he claimed that every time he said the Shema, where halachically you're obligated to know what you're saying and to have the kavanah, to have the intention, and to really know what you're saying, he would repeat the Shema hundreds of times because each time he thought he didn't have enough kavanah, right? And it's a real thing, and it's a very, very, people do this, suffer greatly. And there's lots of halachic rulings, this to the point where sometimes halachic authorities say that the person is absolved from davening altogether, or just to say it once and they shouldn't worry about if they had the right intention or not, and so on and so forth. Yom Kippur is a very good example. The mental state of a person is definitely taken into account. I mean, generally with Yom Kippur, it's important a person who's unhealthy and unable to fast should check with a rabbi and a doctor. But it definitely is taken into account in a good way. Don't forget, mental illness is a real illness, and sometimes if it's not treated properly or it's not protected properly, it could lead to a greater depth of mental illness, which could lead to self-harm or even worse. And therefore, a person's life could actually be in danger. And definitely, it definitely affects Yom Kippur, affects the taking of medication, and so on and so forth. I had a question a few years ago about someone who was recovering in great in deep therapy for a very, very severe eating disorder. And finally, they got themselves into some routine in the doctor's opinion. And I spoke to some from doctors, religious doctors, observant doctors about it as well. And their opinion was that if she fasts on Yom Kippur, she has potential of a relapse. And of course, eating disorders are very dangerous. And I advised that they should definitely keep her eating regimen and she should not fast. So those are some examples. But if I can just say one of the other comparisons, and I think there's a good place to put it in, one of the other comparisons to regular physiological illness is the obligation to seek intervention. Now I'll just say something very important here. We know that and I don't want to go into this at great length, obviously we don't have the time, but we have a mitzvah to protect our health, right? So if someone is sick, it is not a nice thing to go to a doctor. It is not allowed to seek intervention. It is an obligation. It's an absolute mitzvah. It has a number of sources in the Torah, things like v'nishmartim od nafshasechem, you should protect your health. Things like the Torah says that the doctor must heal, which was a source, by the way, of great theological, philosophical debate in ancient times, because there's a line of thinking that if God made me sick, well, then who am I to mix into God's plan? It's a very, very fascinating discussion, not for now, but the bottom line of the discussion is that no, God does what he does, but he wants us to do what we have to do, and he wants us to go to a doctor. And the same is with regard to mental health. Mental health, one has to reach out, and just like you would in physiological health, you need to seek the best possible intervention, which means the professionals of the time, of the time that we're living in, so too with mental health, it is absolutely imperative that a person, if he's suffering from mental health issues, to seek the right help, whether it's therapy, whether it's medication, whether it's an expert, whether it's a combination of both, or whatever the case might be, but actually becomes a mitzvah. However, one little difference is this, two little differences, I'll just point out between, if that's okay, I think it's relevant to your question. Two minor differences between physiological health and mental health. And that is like this. With mental health, by definition, not always, but by definition, it sometimes weakens the decision-making process of the person, right? So the person becomes mentally stressed because they're going through anxiety or depression or any other mental health issue. Therefore, often the decision to seek, it's different when you completely mentally focused and you're suffering from a heart disease or a pain or something that could be dangerous physiologically, then you at least have the obligation and the clarity to hopefully make the right decision and seek intervention. When someone is going through mental stress, it's just the same. It's just another illness. But yet, by definition, it attacks the strength of the mind, and therefore not always the person makes the decision. And therefore, the obligation there to seek intervention is not only on the person, but it's more so on other people. And that's an obligation we all have. It's a communal responsibility, family responsibility, to encourage, to assist, to direct, and see to it that people who need that help actually seek that help. Sorry, I was going to say two differences.
Another
minor difference is this, that when it comes to therapy, it is important, not always possible, but it is important to seek someone, not necessarily who's a Torah observant Jew, but someone who's a sympathetic, at least to your way of life, because often, you know, to do with issues of OCD or even depression, whatever the case is, areas of therapy, without knowing it, without intending to do that, it is possible for therapists to undermine the value system of the person without even being sensitive to it. And that's why, you know, when it comes to, a heart procedure, it really makes a difference as long as the person does it well. What they believe in it really doesn't matter. But sometimes because a component of intervention with mental illness is therapy, sometimes therapy is intertwined with the person's value system. And that is important to find someone that is sympathetic at least to that. That's another little minor difference. I'm hoping that people in the discussion will put in the chat.
Yeah, for sure. People who are watching on Facebook or on Zoom, please comment, ask questions, share your views.
Publicly post, privately post.
Yeah, you can put a private, you can put a public, whatever you want. I want to move on to, we're going to get, I mean, obviously this applies during Corona, before Corona, we're going to hopefully get specific during our times, but just a more in a general question. And I want to ask this question sort of in two ways or two aspects of the question. One aspect of the question is, can Judaism help a person through a mental health crisis? So what I mean by that is, you know, There are many different sfarim, many different Jewish works and books and literature which talk about the character of a person, which deals with anger or ego or worry. For example, I'm doing a whole WhatsApp series the past few months about bitachon, about trusting in God, you know, dealing with anxiety and all these things. Do you think that learning these things would be enough to help a person get through a mental health crisis? Because there's so much in Jewish thought about this, whether it's in Hasidus or in Musar or in Jewish philosophy and all these things which discuss character flaws and even mental health issues to a certain degree, and how to deal with them, and certain advice, and what to think about, and what direction you should take. Is that a helpful tool? Is that a destructive tool? Is that a good thing to recommend to somebody? That's the first. And I guess what that would lead to as part of the discussion is, or perhaps you can help define the difference between regular sort of character issues that everyone has, unless you're a divine person, a very perfect tzaddik. Everyone has anger management problems. Everyone gets worried. Everyone is sad from time to time, for not good reasons necessarily. Could you would you be able to differentiate that between what we're discussing here, what we call mental illness or mental health?
Okay, there's a lot in that question. So first of all, let me just tell you that you changed the question midway. I don't know if you realized.
Okay.
You started off by saying, well, can Yiddishkeit help? And then you say, and then you asked, is it enough? So the answer to your first question is yes. The answer to your second question is no. Right? So what do I mean by that? So let's unpack this a little bit. First of all, let's just define something here.
Well, part of the question was actually, and I'm not sure if you noticed, I put in there, sometimes it can actually be destructive to a certain degree, meaning if a person says, just trust in God and everything will be okay, and right, you're still anxious, right, that can actually destroy your belief in God to a certain degree.
100%. So let me begin answering this question the following way. I think, you know, I got this originally from someone called Dr. Pelkovitz, who's a Torah scholar and also a very leading psychologist in the States. And I kind of got this definition from him in a way. He talks about the difference between, let's say, in depression, for example. He talks about the difference between depression with a small d and depression with a big D, right? Or anxiety with a small a and anxiety with a big A. What I mean by that is as follows. Every person has personality flaws, and some of them have to do with the perspectives that we have, the mindsets that we have, and some of them, certain people, some of them are more emphasized than others. So, for example, take anxiety. You know, some people worry a lot. Do you worry a lot? You're muted for some reason.
Yeah, from time to time, definitely get worried.
Some people just worriers. I don't mean worry in the military sense. I mean worriers, they with the O. Some people are worriers. And some people are not naturally happy. And some people have quite often sort of negative thinking. They judge people negatively. They're always unhappy. They're always right. Okay. That's what we call anxiety with a small a, depression with a small d, and so on. For that, there are good books out there, and particularly in Yiddishkeit. So if someone is just prone to worrying, but he's in control, in other words, he possesses, because we believe fundamentally that everyone has personality flaws. And in Judaism, it's fundamental that we can channel them and we can change them, right? So for that, you don't need, provided that's all it is, and we all have that in different ways. Some people suffer from jealousy, some people suffer from just, you know, always looking at things negatively, pessimistically, and therefore negative thinking and so on and so forth. For that, we have a wealth of literature. You don't need intervention for that, medical intervention. We have a wealth of literature that talk about things like trusting in Hashem, talk about things like Hashgacha Prati, talk about things about what is a meaningful life about, an inner meaning, and how do you achieve happiness, and so on and so forth. And therefore, it's very, very important that people immerse themselves in the type of literature, particularly from a Torah perspective, that will assist them in strengthening and improving the natural personality weaknesses and flaws that they have. And this is true in the secular sense too. I mean, for example, there's a wonderful book I just used in a series called Change Your Thinking by Sarah Edelman, who's an Australian therapist, right? And it's a book written for the common person. It's a book good for people who don't technically have any mental health issues, but they often worry, they often judge things, they often interpret things. And it's a training of how to train your mind to interpret things differently, to have different perspectives, to have different patterns of thinking. There's mindfulness today that people are engaged in, which is also very, very very consistent with Torah values, and it's not a discussion from now, but it is. And there's lots of different things. There's different therapies, which even just the concepts are very, very helpful, right? However, then there's what we call a depression with a big D and anxiety with a big A, or real mental health issues. And that's where it becomes to a point. I mean, now there's a bit of gray area, of course, but it comes to a point where a person is suffering from these concepts, and it's so severe or it's so serious that the person is no longer in control, right? I mean, the example I gave before about obsessive compulsive disorder, right? That has nothing to do with the way you can't sit down and give that person a shear, right? There's just no way. Like, you know, you shouldn't worry so much, and you should trust in God, and you shouldn't be so anxious. That person is suffering from a real illness. The person needs intervention. That intervention might be professional therapy, it might be medication, or might be a combination of both, right? So for that person, not only is Jewish thinking not enough, but it is, like you said, it is dangerous. And that's very often why everyone has to know their role. For example, if it's a rabbi who a person came to, often people come to a rabbi as the first port of call. It is dangerous for the rabbi to say, well, I think you should read, we should listen to Rabbi Levy's WhatsApp group every day about trusting in God. That is irresponsible and it's dangerous. The same thing with depression and anxiety. If a person is suffering from real anxiety, real depression, meaning to the point where either it's triggered by some real trauma, or it's physiological in terms of imbalance, or sometimes it's both. It's a physiological imbalance which is triggered by some traumatic experience or triggered by something that happened or whatever the case is. And it's quite complex because it can be an interplay and combination of lots of different things together. That person absolutely needs proper qualified professional intervention. However, having said that, Jewish thinking and Jewish learning and Jewish perspectives can certainly still help. Because mental health is such a complex area, and it does involve the way the person thinks, and it does involve often the inner happiness and the inner fulfillment or the sense of purpose and meaning that a person has, it is wonderful when what happens is, and I've been involved in many of these cases, where there's a partnership. There's a partnership between therapy and between the rabbi, for example, or Jewish influence, or parents, or whatever the case is, right? Where in addition to the therapy, a person is also strengthening their belief in God, strengthening their sense of purpose, strengthening their commitment to structure in terms of religious observance, and so on and so forth. If it's done that way, and it's done with proper consultation, it's done proper with proper, you know, proper perspective, then it helps, and it's very, very beneficial. So again, regular personal growth. We all have our personality flaws. There we turn to the Torah. The Torah has wonderful guidance, like you say, the works of Musar, the works of ethics, the works of Hasidus, the works of Kabbalah. They, if we only learn them properly and take them seriously, they will change us. They will be life-changing. They will improve our character step by step, not overnight. And that's what we need. However, that's when we are in the position where we're not actually suffering from any particular health issue, whether it's mental health or physical health, and we're actually in control. We just have to discover we're in control. Our decision making is ours, our responsibility is ours, and the Torah places an amazing emphasis on the person's responsibility. The person who doesn't suffer particularly, hasn't had any particular episode, and just says, you know, I didn't like the way my parents brought me up, and therefore I'm, you know, it's okay for me to be angry or anxious or sad or negative or pessimistic. That's a severe mistake. The Torah doesn't believe in that. The Torah believes that we are responsible human beings, and we take responsibility for our own decisions. And if we find it difficult, we need to learn, and we need to understand the capacity and the control of the mind over the heart, and to really improve that way. That is when we are in control. But when we have an illness, we lose that control. We lose that control. We need intervention, and we need intervention. And a component of that intervention can also be the spiritual, the learning, the Yiddishkeit side to it as well.
Okay, so someone just has put on the chat privately to me a question, so I'll just read it out to you.
Sure.
Can rabbis help their communities understand that mentally ill people should not be shunned, as so often happens? Can they encourage inclusiveness so that mentally ill people still feel like they belong in the community? That was the question that was posed today. I just want to add to the question. The question was, can rabbis help? So that definitely is a big question. But I want to add to that question, can regular people help as well? I mean, I'm sure there's definitely a part, but I'm sure as rabbis, as leaders, have a big place in that. But let's also discuss how everyone can help.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the answer is absolutely. And I think this is what I think is one of the reasons we're doing this tonight, right? Is to raise that awareness. I mean, I think we need to point out, I mean, part of the reason we did this now is because right now, as we're going through this particular situation, it's become worse. There's no question that isolation, I mean, I'm in touch with a number of people at the moment. Isolation is not a good thing for people who are particularly, you know, often what happens is people are just like in physical illness. Sometimes people are prone to a particular illness and don't become ill until something happens, until there's a trigger. In mental health, same thing. There are people who are prone to anxiety, prone to depression, whatever the case is. Isolation is there are a couple of things that are happening now that are just not good for that. Isolation is one of them. Uncertainty is another. That doesn't mean that everyone who's uncertain is going to suffer mental health issues. But someone who's either had mental health issues in the past or prone to it in any way, this could trigger it. And there's no question that now we have to, for sure, without a question, raise the awareness. Now, this question about rabbis helping people not to be shunned, I mean, it's absolutely, they should not be shunned. It's like any other. You don't shun a person with a heart attack. You don't shun a person with a stroke or cancer. You don't shun a person with mental illness. You help them. Sometimes it means their contribution or their participation is a bit different, whatever the case is, but certainly you have to reach out to them. We have to help them. And we have to raise the awareness that there should be no stigma attached to mental awareness. However, it's not just rabbis. It is everyone. It is good for people to familiarize themselves, not to qualify, not to become therapists, but to familiarize themselves with what the issues are and what is mental health look like, or what does depression look like, or what does anxiety look like, to be able to notice if there's something off with a friend of theirs, and to reach out to people, and to, you know, they have this thing what's called that once a year called an Are You Okay Day, right? I mean, that's a suicide prevention thing, and it's very, very important. And so I'm not trying to undermine that day at all. But actually, the truth is that every day should be an Are You Okay Day, right, if we can. I mean, just to find out. Sometimes people are reluctant to talk, and a simple question like, are you okay, could make all the difference. They could say, well, actually, no, I'm not really okay. Or they can answer ambivalently, giving you a clue that actually not really okay. You know, if you say someone, is everything okay? And they say, oh, I don't want to really talk about it. So, you know, no, it's not okay. You need to seek some advice or probe a little bit further so you can encourage them, either lift their spirits or encourage them actually to get the appropriate help. So yes, it's a communal, I think this issue is a communal responsibility. In any communal responsibility, obviously rabbis play a particular role and they have to lead that responsibility. Part of doing it is not to replace the therapy, but to raise awareness of these issues from a Torah perspective, from a Jewish perspective, and to raise awareness that it is, number one, prevalent. It is quite around, more than we think, at different levels. Secondly, it is not associated with any stigma. It's like any other illness, and we need to treat it as such.
So you've touched upon this a few times. I just want to ask if you can elaborate. Let's talk about specifically the time which we're in now. Even though, you know, in New South Wales, at least, we're not under lockdown anymore, but things are still uncertain. In fact, in a way, they're a little bit more uncertain now than they were a few months ago. A few months ago, we were locked in our house, and that's what it was. Now it's like, we don't know, maybe we will, maybe we won't, maybe there will be shul, maybe there won't be shul, like no one really knows what's happening.
Definitely.
There will be shul, we're confident, but the bottom line is no one really knows. So perhaps you can elaborate on your experience throughout this time of the specific mental health issues that people are struggling with now, and what people can do to help with that now. Because as the title of this discussion was, the pandemic, which hasn't made the headlines, because the truth is, it is a pandemic. If you look at the statistics, you know, this very crazy statistics about the rise of negative thoughts, suicide thoughts, etc., especially amongst young people. So, can you just touch upon that more specifically now, and what we could do about it now?
So, as you said, I mean, I think there are a number of factors that are making this whole situation worse now. Number one is, as I said, isolation. Isolation is a little bit better now in Sydney, not completely. Isolation, and I've come in contact with a lot of people, especially in the beginning, where at different levels, I mean, some people wasn't perhaps putting them in a real experience of a mental health episode, but it was certainly stressing them out to quite a good degree. And so isolation is certainly one. And certainly, you know, the Talmud says a fascinating thing. The Talmud says, "Ein simcha kehatarat asfikot." There's no greater joy than clarity, clarity of doubt. People really, it's actually a human thing. People are really affected by confusion and lack of clarity. The other is financial stress. Not everyone is going through financial stress, but many people are. And that, of course, is very real and can often be a trigger for real mental health issues. Sometimes it can take people who are already suffering and make it worse to the point where they even in danger. Now, so there's two things that we can do. Three things really, but mainly two things. I mean, the first thing is to check in. I think checking in with people is something, is someone that everyone could do. But it should come with familiarizing ourselves, reading about it and understanding. And if you're not sure what it is, talk to someone just to understand the basics of what mental health is all about and sort of what does depression look like, what does anxiety look like, and when does something look off a little bit, and to notice. You know, it's a little bit about mindful living. It's to notice people, but it's to reach out to people, it's to call people, once in a while. You can't call everyone every day, but to call people, just say hi. You know, there's a story in the Chumash where, and it's a nice thought, this, which I'm going to make it very brief, but Joseph was thrown into the dungeon for a number of years, and in there he met the butler and the baker, right, the famous story. And he came in one morning, and he said to them, good morning, with a nice smile. What he said was, according to the Chumash, he said to them, Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. Why is your face bad today? In other words, you look upset, you look down. What's the problem? And that unraveled the whole story, where they told him about his dreams, and then that led eventually to Yosef's release and him becoming the viceroy of Egypt. His whole transformation came from four words when he said to them, Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. Why, you know, you don't look like you're on top notch today. What's wrong? Anything that I can help with? Now, of course, you need to do that with intelligence. Some people don't like when you pry, you know, like we should keep people, protect people's dignity, protect people's privacy. But a simple question like, how are you? Are you okay? And if someone's not okay, by the way, they also need to know that it's okay not to be okay. You know, I've told a few people lately, it's okay not to be okay. It's just not okay to remain not okay. Because you have to do something about it. And if it needs intervention, you need to get that intervention. But it's okay to have a bad day, and it's okay to feel down. You don't have to beat yourself up for it, right? So just a simple reaching out to people, giving them, but just to tell them, you know, you mean something to me. Sometimes lots of real mental health issues are triggered by people feeling that they're not valued, that they feel empty. There's a sense of emptiness and sort of purposelessness, right? You reach out to someone like, you know, you're important to me kind of thing. There's a message, I value you. Maybe you can help me with something. You know, can I discuss something with you? All that kind of stuff. That is something that everyone can do, and it can be extremely powerful. You can never know what one little phone call can actually do to a person and can actually lift a person. Further than that, if you see someone who's really suffering, we need to actually encourage them to get the right help. Encourage today, it can be done during this period particularly. They've set up a whole system of, I forgot what the word is, teleconferencing, teleconsultations, whatever the case is. And, you know, people can do counseling over Zoom and over phone and all kinds of things. And there's help available, and we just need to help them. If you're not sure how to assist someone, that we need to check in with the professional itself. We can consult with someone who knows about these things and ask them what's the best way to actually help someone. But I think it's about awareness, about noticing, about reaching out to people, the maps we haven't reached out for a while, a simple phone call, the simple hello, the simple smile. All these things are very, very powerful. And I think we have a communal responsibility to do as much as we can to lift people and to help people and to encourage people to get the right help.
Okay. Once again, if anyone has any questions, please post in the chat, in the comments on Facebook, wherever you're watching.
Can I just say one point also? I think during this time also, for ourselves, for all of us, I think we're all going through stuff. You know, I noticed a very, very fascinating thing when at the beginning of this whole process, and I was calling different people, who are least expected to be suffering were suffering. People were shocked, and it was a shock to the system, right? And people were really unsettled. People who I really thought were strong emotionally, you know, people were unsettled. So we all gone through stuff. And I think one of the things also we said before, especially during this time, is to give ourselves the certainty and to, you know, I've often said to go from the world of uncertain to the certain. There are certain things that within ourselves are certain, and that is our connection to God, the love that God has for us, the belief in God, and so on and so forth. And therefore, again, not as a replacement for appropriate intervention, but I think now more than ever, it is important to explore the works of Yiddishkeit, that deal with positive thinking, with trust in Hashem, with emunah, with faith, with, you know, with a sense of purpose and meaning and so on and so forth.
Okay. Just a question only to do with COVID specifically, but on the mental health topic. You said sometimes, many times a person needs intervention from a therapist. I'm not sure if you have experience in this and if you can answer this question, but it's an interesting question. How does one actually find a good therapist? Meaning, I don't mean practically what number to call. I mean to say, I'm sure there are different theories in therapy, different approaches. How does one sort of discover what works for them and what the right approach for them is?
Yeah, that's a good question. The truth is that it's no different than anything else. Now, it's different because when the therapist you're looking for when the profession you're looking for is the therapist, for example, or social work or therapy, often it needs to click. It's a bit of a relationship and it needs to actually work. Sometimes a bit of trial and error, and people should not be... there's a statistic that I read a number of months ago about treating depression or mental health issues, that among religious people, they're the most impatient. They want it to be fixed right now. I don't know why this is, but I have no idea what the reasoning behind it is. You know, I went to a doctor, it's not helping. It's like, you know, I took an antibiotics and 6 months, 6 hours later, it's not helping it. Stuff like this needs patience. Number one, you need to obviously consult your GP. You need to consult people. People know of good therapists, good professionals, good doctors, whatever the case is, and try to get the best care. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes we have to try someone else. Sometimes we have to, particularly in therapy, sometimes you need a relationship with a person that doesn't click, and so you try something else. But the main thing is to be willing to have that willingness and openness to seek help and to receive help. And it's not always the first time right. It takes a bit of research sometimes, like any other medical experience.
Okay, someone's asked a question to me privately here. Is there anything that has been written in Jewish texts about why some people get mental illness?
That's a very good question. Not that I'm aware of specifically. If I can tell, there is stuff that's written in terms of like depression with a small d and anxiety with a small a, right? In other words, yes, there are specific things that lead to unhappiness. We know that there's research that nowadays when people have more than they ever have, they have more unhappiness than we ever had. People are more anxious today than ever, more unhappy than ever. And part of that is because there are reasons for that. Part of the reasons is a lack of purpose, a lack of focus. You know, even in most recent works, the works of Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, where the theory is that every person has an inherent drive and aspiration to live a life of meaning. And when you don't pursue that meaning, sometimes that leaves an emptiness. If we pursue pleasure over happiness, self-centeredness over selflessness, often that leads to feelings of emptiness, and that can lead to seeing depression. And sometimes that can even land up in clinical depression with the big D and the big A. However, I must point out that I think the answer to that question is that we actually don't, you know, in terms of real mental health issues where a person has a physiological illness that is caused by an imbalance in the body and it's or hormonal or whatever the case is, that is, we don't know the answer to that, because I think this, it's the same answer to why does God make people sick. I don't know the answer to that question. I believe that it is God, and we don't have to know the answer to that question. And I think normalizing mental illness in the way where we don't create a stigma to it is that it's exactly that, to understand that it's an illness like any other illness. There are people there are some you find often that people even have no apparent triggers. They have not suffered trauma. They grew up in a good family, healthy living seems to be called very well balanced, and they suffer from real mental illness. And that's not, it's just an illness. It's exactly what it is. And I don't know the answer to that as much as I don't know the answer to why God makes people disabled, why God causes heart disease and cancer and so on and so forth. Now, we know that just like with any other illness, I mean, maybe this is something to talk about as well, right? Obviously, we know that there are certain things that prevent illness, any illness. Now, that doesn't mean you'll never get it, right? There are people who are unbelievably healthy who die of heart attack, God forbid, right? But we do know that in terms of quality of life, or in terms of perhaps delaying or preventing perhaps an illness from taking place, we need to choose to live healthily, to eat properly, to exercise, to be emotionally healthy, and so on and so forth. there's not a guarantee, just like it's not a guarantee with any other physical illness, it's not a guarantee with this either. And some people just end up ill, unfortunately, for reasons that we don't know. But it's a good question.
Okay. Let's move on to a different sort of area of how mental illness affects people's lives, and that is in relationships. I know this is, you know, relationships is a topic in and of its own, and we should definitely do it. How do you find that mental illness how mental illness affects relationships? Could it strengthen a relationship? Could it weaken a relationship? What's your experience with that?
That's a great question. So generally speaking, I think this is a topic generally that trauma and stress in relationships can go either way. It can break relationships or it can enhance relationships. And I think there are two things that people need to make sure that any type of trauma in a relationship, whether it's one person being physically sick or mentally ill or any other trauma, there are two things that one needs to put into place to make sure that if, God forbid, one of these things happen in a relationship, it actually strengthens the relationship rather than destroying it. The first thing is to work on relationships when they're healthy. All relationships, and I know this is not a topic about relationships, but it's worth saying, all relationships need work. The greatest of relationships we should ever take for granted, they always need work. It needs respect. It needs good strategies in conflict resolution. It needs good listening. It needs good empathy. There are many ingredients, and it's not for now, but there are ingredients that are necessary, and necessary as an investment, as in and constant maintenance that is needed in every relationship. When those things are really there, like sometimes a relationship appears good, but it's good on the outside and it's very thin, it's got cracks. And sometimes something happens, it falls apart. So that's a very important thing. When things are going well, we should never wait for things to be problematic before we start working on them. We should strengthen the relationship, strengthen our own health, strengthen everything while they're going well. Number one. Number two, related to that, is understanding. And I think this goes back to the awareness of mental illness. Sometimes when a partner or spouse is suffering from mental illness, the more we understand how it works, the more it doesn't affect the relationships. It is not easy. It is a very big trauma in the relationship. When one partner in the relationship is suffering from extreme anxiety or real depression or whatever the case is, we shouldn't be in denial. It is not easy for the other one. It is definitely not easy. And sometimes the other person also needs to get help and needs to reach out and just get some solid advice, some chizuk, as we call it, strengthening, to be able to navigate and to withhold their whole process and go through that journey. However, the more understanding that a person has, the better it is. So the more they understand it, just like people don't get angry with their spouses for breaking their hand or having heart issues, whatever the case is, unless they're angry with them because they wanted to live more healthy and they didn't, they ate the wrong things maybe, but they're not, because they understand it's an illness. So you have empathy. Same thing with the mental illness. If the more we understand about it, the more we get to the bottom of it and understand that it's an illness, then we can, the more respectful and the more accepting we can be.
So moving on to sort of a similar topic and idea, to those of us with children, especially little children, do you see mental health issues with little children? What could parents do to prevent it, to diagnose it, and things like that?
So yes, the answer is that mental issues certainly happens in small children. Now, obviously, when things, you know, in very small children, it's also, I think, important to understand there's a balance. Not every time, you know, children's a little bit off color that we should raise the alarm and book into a psychiatrist and so on, right? I mean, children are children, they go through different changes and something. However, at the same time, particularly, I'll point this out, particularly in young adolescents, and particularly when children are transitioning from children to teenagers, right? It's not easy. There's I once went into this a little bit. There's quite a pronounced or significant amount of mental health issues that occur with children as they enter high school. It's very different. It's very pressurizing. They're going through their own stuff, puberty, and so on and so forth. It's a very difficult time of life, and it could trigger mental health issues. I must say also, sometimes it could trigger issues which are temporary, and if you just navigate them properly and you get the right help, right? I've seen parents do this where they just get the right help, the right advice of just what to say and how to support. to carry the child through that short period, and afterwards they bounce back and they're fine. Not always, but it's not something to ignore and not something to sweep under the carpet. It does happen, and it happens particularly when there's changes. It happens when there's trauma in children's lives, but also changes physically, hormonally, and so on and so forth. And it is important to notice and sometimes, again, seek the proper help for them.
Okay. Once again, if anyone has any questions, feel free to comment. I just want to put an interesting question out there that I was thinking about today. We've just been through a tough few months, and people always like to think that when you go through a tough time, you'll be strong, right? In other words, like you think, you know, if something bad's going to happen to me in life, I'm going to get through it and I'm going to be strong. But let's say we weren't strong. Let's say, you know, throughout the lockdown, not necessarily even serious mental health issues, even just, as you say, you know, depression with a small d and anxiety with a small a and sort of anger issues with a small a as well. Let's say we didn't succeed. Does that mean that you're doomed for life? Meaning if through the tough times you didn't manage to get through properly, so when are you going to get, in other words, when are you going to prove yourself is what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. But I think the fundamental Jewish concept is that we're never, ever at a point of no return. There's always hope. And because we didn't, in our own mind, first of all, we don't know in our own mind what we did pass or we didn't, what we failed. Sometimes we did pretty well and we just beat ourselves up because we think we didn't do a good job, but we did. But also there's a concept of resilience. And resilience is a whole nother topic. And we do. We have the both in physical and mental issues, we have the capacity for real inner strength. The strength of the inner soul of the human being is amazing. It's very, very powerful. So every day is a new day. What happened yesterday is what happened yesterday, but we can always learn from it. But there's always, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's in all areas. I mean, Rabbi Akiva, for example, was illiterate at 40 and became one of the greatest Torah sages, right? He didn't say, well, I'm doomed because I'm so used to this already. We believe in the power of resilience. We believe in the power of the human being. We believe in the human being. There's always hope. Now, sometimes it's a hard road. Sometimes it's quite, you know, it can come in all different ways. I just want to point out, there was a comment that someone put on the chat. Mental illness can be either or both chemical or circumstantial. In both instances can be triggered in a variety of ways. Often unexpectedly, absolutely. And I think I thought I made that clear before, but there's all kinds of triggers. Often it's just physiological. Often it's both. Very often it's both. It becomes physiological, but it's also triggered by something circumstantial, traumatic, and so on and so forth. Whatever it is, it can be. That itself needs to be sorted out, needs to be dealt with. But there's always, we need to believe that there's always. And the Jewish way is, if something doesn't work, we keep trying. We never give up. We keep fighting. That's the fighting spirit that's within each and every one of us.
Okay. So unless anybody else has any questions, I think we'll leave it at that for tonight. I just want to end off. First of all, we'll be back next week and we'll share the topic a little bit later. I just want to end off that tonight is a special night. It's the beginning of Elul, which is the month of preparation to Rosh Hashanah. And we know that Rosh Hashanah, of course, Hashem writes and seals us all for a good year. And in the context of tonight's discussion, I think one of the things that we can bless each other, you know, in the Mishaberach for, you know, sometimes when we read the Torah, we make a prayer for sick people, for people who are ill. And the expression which we use is Menuchas HaNefesh and Menuchas HaGuf, which means peace of mind and peace of body, meaning a person should be healthy in body and in spirit. So I think it's a good opportunity to bless each other on this auspicious day of Rosh Chodesh Elul, that we should all have a Shana Tova, a good year, and a good year not only in physical health, of course, but also in mental health. We should have calmness and have meaning in our life and have true Menuchas HaNefesh.
Amen.
All right, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us.